Production. Recorded live.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Best Interest of the Family Radio. I'm the producer, Dave Taylor. And tonight, I get to introduce, make a special introduction, in fact, for our parent coach, Larry Heron, who has been duly promoted to co-producer of Best Interest of the Family Radio. What do you got to say for yourself, Larry, with this new promotion?
I'm speechless.
And you know what? It comes with a great big article in the mail that's going to come to you, too. A big thank you.
I'm speechless.
I know you were expecting more, and of course you're duly, you know, should, because of all the great contributions that you make to our program. And that's why you are the newly acclaimed co-producer.
I'm speechless.
Well, folks, this is a first for Biff Radio. We have Larry Heron, the parent coach, is speechless. So in the meantime, I'll just talk a little bit about one of my favorite organizations in the state of Michigan, Dads and Moms of Michigan. Otherwise, you can find this organization at dadsandmomsofmichigan.org. Their phone number is 888-851-3666, and you might be asking, why would I want this information? Well, if you are dealing with parenting time issues, if you want to learn more about how to be a good parent, if you want to learn how to navigate through issues of the front of the court, need a good referral to a an attorney that may be able to help you out with matters,
or a
therapist for that matter, or, you know, take some particular classes that are geared and fashioned toward, you know, raising children and learning how to be a good co-parent and what have you, you will want to contact Dads and Moms of Michigan. In fact, there is a free shared parenting seminar that's being held in a new venue. That's going to, my understanding is that Dads and Moms of Michigan is going to be changing up the venue every month or so, so there's a little more saturation in the community. This one's being held at Hazel Park, Michigan, which is at the Hazel Park Eagles, on September the 11th. Everybody remembers that date, 9/11. But in this particular instance, on September 11th from 10 until noon at 22010 North Chrysler Drive in Hazel Park. Again, that's being held at the Hazel Park Eagles Club. And I'm sure that everybody in Hazel Park knows where that is, because I'm sure that that's a special meeting point there for the Hazel Park folks. And we're excited about the fact that Larry and I are going to be there, and Larry is going to be doing a special segment. Now, if Larry is not still speechless, he might want to tell you about what he's going to be doing.
Well, Dave, I know a little bit about this. You know, I'm not speechless about this. No, I'm always honored to participate in any way I can to be helpful at the Dads and Moms of Michigan and the seminars that we monthly now put on. This particular one we always get a lot of requests for, and that is understanding parental alienation, what to do if it's occurring, how to recognize if it's occurring, and how to recognize what it is to ensure that you yourself are not participating in it or reacting to it in a way that puts kids in the middle to actually struggle through both parents then going back and forth with it. So we're going to have great discussion about that, in-depth discussion, parental alienation, on September 11th, as Dave said, at the annual monthly Dads and Moms of Michigan meeting at the Eagles Club. Very grateful to the Eagles for hosting this. The Eagles have, I'm not sure if we reached out to them or they reached out to us. I think after they learned a little bit more about us, though, they have been a very willing and interested partner in hosting some of our seminars, some of our meetings. They're a great, great organization. We're very privileged and humbled to have them on board with us. So, again, that's September 11th, 10 to 12. And that's a Saturday morning from 10 to 12 noon. And chance also to network and meet a lot of different people, gain a lot of understanding, and meet some just great people. They'll be, as Dave said, we'll be there, and all the board from Dads and Moms of Michigan will be there. And a lot of great people that
are some legal advice there.
Oh, there'll definitely be a legal roundtable going on. My gosh, we had umpteen lawyers and
got a candidate for judge there.
Candidate for judge at the last one, yep. Absolutely, Kathleen Ryan. You never know who might show up to these meetings.
Well, I'll tell you what, Lair. I understand that you had a bang up time down in Texas. We both took a little time off here from broadcast for a couple weeks, and now we're all warmed up, and I'm excited to be back on Biff. But tell us a little bit about your adventures down in Texas.
Oh my gosh, Dave, that would take a whole separate show. You know, what we did was we took off to spend quality time with our kids too, and that's always fun. DJ, he's had quite a summer. We've been all over. We've been to Mackinac, we've been to New Orleans, and we've been to now Tejas, Texas. The child has been well traveled, and we did the usual. We did the rodeo, we did the lake and jet ski, and my gosh, Dave, did I tell you I got pictures where DJ was actually driving the jet ski, my 7-year-old, with Uncle Ed on the back.
Good for him.
That part of it's safe, and wearing a life jacket, of course. But, yeah, the little bugger, he took off on the jet ski and did the gas and drove that darn thing better than we could, Dave. I'm a little bit, a little bit mixed on that. But he did have a great time, got some autographs from some bull riders at the rodeo, and got a glove of one of the bull riders. I want to say thank you to Chris Harris down there in Texas as a professional bull rider who is a kid. I mean, he's really, I don't think, more than 20, 21 years old, very humble guy. And gave DJ not only his autograph, but said, you know, my signature ain't worth much right now. I haven't won enough, but my brother is a 2-time world champion bull rider, J.W. Harris. And for all you rodeo cowboys out there and cowgirls, you probably know who J.W. Harris is. He is just a world-class athlete in being able to bull ride. I don't know if you've ever seen that, Dave, but I spent a little time rodeoing when I was a kid, and it ain't an easy thing. It's the most dangerous sport in the world.
Well, you should see how us Hoosiers ride a bull.
Yeah.
You ain't seen nothing until you see a Hoosier ride a bull.
Yeah, folks, I don't know if we want to see that, but anyway, this guy actually then handed DJ his glove, his bull riding glove, and said, that's my brother's, J.W. Harris, and his initials were on it. He said, so that might be worth something, and he autographed it. And we said, my gosh, you don't have to give up your glove. My gosh, don't do that. And he said, nah, I'll give it to him. So my son, the charmer, he did it again. And but then, as you know, Dave, I partook in a dad event. We didn't take DJ, a little bit too dangerous for him. But those Texans, I'll tell you, if we get Hoosiers and Texans together, that could be an interesting, entertaining kind of thing.
It could be a good mix, yeah.
Went on a wild pig hunt, literally. Never have done that before. We used dogs, a guide that's name is Jay. I can't remember Jay's
name. Now,
I'll tell
you something, though. What does a wild pig look like? Does it have these big tusks and stuff?
It does. It has big teeth. There's a difference between wild boar, wild pig, wild... You know, I'm not sure what all the difference is in terms of... how this happens, but basically the farmer's pigs escape and they mate with whatever's out there.
That's a word picture.
Yeah, well, you know, it's Texas. But, it depends on what they're mating with as to what comes out, whether it's these Russian boars that are actually, I don't think...
I dated a Russian boar one time.
Dave, don't go there. But we've worked on this in therapy. Don't go there, Dave. And then you got wild boar, and then you got these wild hogs, wild pigs, which I think are a little bit smaller. This particular one that we took was about 150 pounds, and I don't think it's that, about 120, 130 pounds.
Now, you say you took it. What do you mean? What are you talking about? You took the pig.
I took the pig. We took the pig. Jay, as I said, was a phenomenal guide, and I was calling him Daniel Boone after what I saw him do. I've never seen anything like this in my life. They use pit bull dogs and or some other breeds as well, but he had a kennel full of pit bulls. They release the dogs, and they have bay dogs first. They go out and snip out the pig, and then they once they find them, and by the way, they've got these dogs, the collars, they've got GPS on the collars, so they follow them all over the countryside in a truck and sometimes on foot. So we were out there, and pigs are nocturnal, so we're out there at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Well, you know, Larry, if they would put GPS on these pigs that escaped from the farmers, they might not have this problem.
You might have a point there, Dave. If all the farmers would just put GPSs on their hogs, and they'd know where to find them when they escape. That's a good point. I'm going to have you go down to Texas and sell
that. I can make a lot of money doing it.
Yeah, you know, you might have something. So they go out and they bait the pigs, they bark in their face and everything. And when they've figured out that the dogs have one, then they release the what they call the bulldog pit bulls, and they are trained. I got a whole new respect for these dogs. They go out there, and as you saw in some of the pictures, they it can be pretty dangerous. These dogs sometimes get killed. They go out and they literally grab onto the pig's ears, tails, whatever they can get a hold of, and they hold the pig in place until Jay, Daniel Boone, goes in there and does nothing except with a knife, and he didn't have one, I did. He went in there and threw the pig down like a calf, got in between the dogs, and boom, took the pig's feet from underneath it, had its knee on its neck, and then called me over to stab the pig.
This is like, so, he's like holding the pig. He's like, Larry, get over here.
And stab it. And I did. And had pork chops Monday morning before we left. It was phenomenal. I've never in my life, you know, I'm not a huge hunter, but I've never, ever experienced anything like that. It was a rush.
Well, I don't know, Larry. That seems like an awful lot to go through to put bacon on, you know, on the table for next morning. But and I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but, you know, even the women and the children in Indiana, you know, we do this with a fork. You know, you said you do this with a you know, you stabbed the thing. You, like, took a knife and, you know, kind of thing.
Well, Dave, in order to get the pig on the table of Indiana, you have to do what I did. And you guys, they're just taking shortcuts with the fork, you know. Either way, it
But I'll tell you,
good.
My mom's on the board. I'll tell you, what she does with pineapple and pig, I'm telling you. Yeah, you can definitely write home about that one.
Well, you know, I've had some of your mother's cooking, and let me tell you, I think she could make peanut butter and jelly taste better than most gourmets. I mean, that woman can cook.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's amazing she got rid of me so early in life. You know, I left home so early thinking, seeing as the food was so good. But, you know, just being that middle child kind of thing and the wanderer in the bunch, I had to get going in life.
Well,
she
explained some of that too, but I got to keep that confidential. We get back to that HIPAA violation.
I think we get back to talking about how they change the locks and stuff. But I love you, Mom. I know you're out there.
I understand, but you had quite a time off too, though, with your
daughter. Of course. You know, it's always eventful. We always have a great time. You know, Rebecca and I opted to go camping over one of the weekends, and we prefer to go to, like, the leisure camping. You know, it's kind of like a Jellystone part type of thing.
You mean you stayed in the cabin, Dave?
No, we didn't stay in the cabin. Actually, I pitched a tent, but, you know, next time around, we might do the cabin thing. They got a lot more cabins up there, but we took the dogs. We took Callie and Blanca and carted them around the park, and they, you know, it's really a lot of fun. Rebecca and I just have the greatest time. We go camping. They got a lot of activities to do there, and you know, just having that time. Where what's really funny is that sometimes Rebecca will say something like, "Dad, I'm bored." I'm gonna say, "That's the point. If you're bored, then we're going to pick up a book and we're going to read, or we're going to take some marshmallows and we're going to stick them on the fire or something like that." And then she understood. When I told her that's the point, she understood. It's, you know, like, remember, honey, when we go fishing, you're not bored when you fish, are you? No. I said, well, you're not always getting bites, are you? No. but you know, we really appreciate our time away with, you know, with nature and in the tent and, fire going and marshmallows and hot dogs and everything we can, you know, add to that. So, but I'll tell you what, Larry, we've probably gone over most of the gamut of what we've done for the last couple of weeks, but we need to get into our special guest tonight, Mr. Robert Fox, who I know is a close personal colleague of yours. And what we're going to be covering primarily is discussing the need for parents to be able to identify specific developmental and emotional needs of their children while identifying any negative contributions that they themselves might be having.
Well, you know, Dave, this is an important subject matter because, as you know, we from time to time scratch our head and think, well, you know, what does our audience want to hear about? What could be most educational to them? And what we've really consistently and frequently found is that co-parenting conflicts and understanding how do you work together with somebody that doesn't necessarily want to work with you tends to be ongoing, probably our greatest challenge, our most requested how-tos. And So in putting tonight's show together, we thought about this and thought, well, you know, let's talk about it. Let's talk about some of the conflict and working through that, but understanding at the end of the day, why is it important for our children to have our utmost attention, our understanding, and our sacrifice and giving to their needs, understanding what those needs are, and how to parent. How to parent when there's extra hoops to jump through and extra challenges that we face in a co-parent that may not necessarily be willing. And got thinking about, well, who might we team with to talk about that with? And, of course, Robert Fox, who on the board some of you have come to know as NOLA Bob, which stands for New Orleans Bob, and a very close and personal friend of mine that, quite honestly, Dave, I just couldn't do without. He's truly been just a phenomenal friend, a real brother through all of this.
Oh, come on, admit it. He's your therapist.
Well, you know, he's done a little bit of therapy for me. I've got to do it for you, and every once in a while I have to go to him for some peer review when it comes to
peer
you.
Peer review.
And so he...
Well, you know or not, Bob's come to me for a little peer review on you, so...
He's just been phenomenal, and... He's got a great deal of expertise and knowledge to share in these areas because he himself is a therapist, has specialized both in mental health and in substance abuse. A lot of people don't understand that, but in fact, Bob, when we first met at a local clinic, which is no longer in existence here, it used to be in the Redford area. Actually, Botsford Family Services still is, but the Redford clinic that we initially met at is not there, but Bob was doing a lot of substance abuse work, and we worked a lot together. And his extensive work with kids and with family is has and training in those areas has afforded him just a great deal of knowledge. And of course, after divorce and outside of marriage type dynamics, he's worked a lot in and brings just a wealth of knowledge and insight. So. My gosh, Dave, we're always humbled and pleased to have our buddy, Bob Fox.
Hey, Bob.
Well, good evening, gentlemen. How are you?
Terrific.
How you doing, buddy?
Glad to hear from you guys. I understand it's pretty warm up there today.
It's only 90 here. What's going on down there in New Orleans?
It's only 90 down here today.
But the thing is, it's 90 right now at 7:30 at night, right?
Oh, yeah. It's 90 all the time.
And Bob, we trust that that hurricane out there in the Pacific the Atlantic, in my bearings here, is coming up the East Coast. That's not one New Orleans is going to have to deal with, it looks like.
Well, at least, yeah, apparently Earl, you know, Danielle's already gone apparently, but Earl is working its way up the East Coast. But I'm kind of a little worried about Fiona and the one behind that that's starting to develop. We're watching that. But nobody's in any panic mode down here yet, so we're going to do okay.
Earl and Fiona, that sounds like a wedding in Indiana.
Yeah, Fiona. Fiona and Goose Gaston, I think. So, that could be a wedding.
I think Gaston stood up for Earl and Fiona.
They must be running out of names for these things.
Right. Yes, I think so. Too many of them, too many.
Well, I'll tell you what, Mr. Fox. What are some of the things that come to mind when you think about the consequences for children of an absent parent?
Well, you know, a lot of things come to mind as you and I have talked in the past. The biggest thing that happens for children, and it's dependent upon the age of the child when a separation occurs in their parents or between their parents. But the biggest thing is making sure that the needs of the children are prioritized and are never subjugated to parental need. Having said that, the biggest need a child has within an intact family as well as in a non-intact family situation, is simple consistency. That is the fundamental need that children have of the adults in their life, and of course the most important adults in their life are our parents. And consistency, you know, can vary what that means for a particular child and a particular family, but it's simply some level of predictability. That child goes to bed and wakes up the next day with some basic understanding of what is going to occur in that child's life. And that again, that is a fundamental need of all children, whether or not they're in or outside of an intact family situation. And I think sometimes that gets lost when parents are coming apart for any number of reasons. And then, depending on the child's age and experience, you know, the consequences of lack of consistency, you know, can have any number of detrimental effects. And, we can certainly explore those as we go. But for me, that's number one need. That is absolutely number one need. And that is a need that children have, as you know, from birth through a total independent child, through adulthood, is that level of consistency. Now, the role that level of consistency plays in that child's life, it's certainly dependent upon where that child is chronologically and developmentally. But everything kind of grows out of that consistency.
Well, Bob, what are some of the things that come to mind as a therapist? How do you assure this consistency for a child? Let's face it, you know, with our audience, we're dealing with a lot of dynamics. We're dealing with some that are some parents are dealing with parental alienation. They're not seeing the children on a consistent basis. They may be running into a lot of roadblocks and what have you. They may be running into a awful parenting time order that only makes them a visitor in the lives of the children, you know, every other weekend at best. You know, you know some of these dynamics. How can we try to assure consistent contact or more or other areas of consistency for the child under these dynamics?
Well, again, there are two kinds of consistency. One is consistency in terms of contact, which, you know, is, as we've talked on the show, as well as, you know, over the phone outside of the show. Certainly my preference is that parents, whenever possible, should have equal access to the children, or vice, actually, you should say that reverse. Children should have equal access to their parents. That's always, you know, in a non-intact family situation, that more times than not is optimal. So there's a, you know, consistency in terms of the predictability a child can expect to see one or the other of the parents. And then the consistency about what is predictable and expected during that contact with the parents. So there's two kinds of things going on with regard to consistency. One is,
and a child,
yes, I know.
A child will grow to understand that both parents have a different parenting style, correct?
Exactly. And again, that's sometimes that's where consistency can get easily manipulated in this kind of in the family law arena, where, you know, one parent will make a claim that the rules and the routines and the structure in the other parent's home is significantly different than the parent, than the rules and the routines and structure at the other parent's home. And then that becomes an issue of, quote, consistency. Now, children are very resilient, and they understand differences in rules, differences in you know, expectations given different environments. That happens when children go from the home to daycare to preschool to kindergarten, even from teacher to teacher within the school setting. Everybody can recall, I know I can, and I'm not old enough to still have, I'm not as old that I've lost my memory, but I remember first, second, third grade, we knew teacher so-and-so had, you know, a different set of expectations than the other teacher that we would move from one subject to another. So children are real resilient in terms of understanding that and adapting to that. The thing that has to occur is the consistency. You knew when you went from teacher A to teacher B, when you walked into that class, you knew how she was going to be, or he, as the case may be. And you could bet on it because the teacher was always like that. That's consistency. It doesn't mean that every teacher has to have exactly the same style. Well, the same applies to parents. Parents can differ between, you know, their style, the way they provide the routines and structures and disciplines. And the children are resilient and will understand that and adapt to that and be fine with that. You know, you want to be, you know, ideally in the same ballpark, but you don't have to all be on the same side of the field. You can be within, you know, you can play right field, like play left field, you play, you know, center field. That's all fine. If you're in the same ballpark, you're still playing the same game. And the children understand that.
Well, sure, of course, you know, as long as you're providing those basic fundamental and developmental needs for the child. I mean, it doesn't take brain surgery. You know, I can do this stuff. So, you know, certainly, raising children, you know, there's no specific, guidebook out there. I'd like to think that, there's a book that I like to use. It's called the Bible. You know, that gives me a lot of insight. But at the very least, like you said, children need consistency. They need love. They need to be assured. They need to be encouraged. You know, these are basic things that this doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what your parenting style is, right?
Right. And we're talking a normal range of parenting style. Of course, there are, you know, parenting styles that are not healthy, but they're not healthy within an intact as well as a non-intact family situation.
Sure.
And we're not talking
And they're not
about
healthy in work relationships and everything else either, so it goes across the board.
Exactly. And there is a lot of room for interpretation. You know, a lot of people read the Bible and come out of that with very different interpretations of what that means and how to apply it. And that's all fine and good, and that's fine. And the same thing kind of applies here with parenting. Is, you know, there's a routine and a structure that parents will have with their children. And it may differ from the other parent in a co-parenting situation. As long as the consistency with that parent is there, the consistency between the parents isn't always necessary. Sometimes on some issues, it's nice to have it. And sometimes it simply isn't required. But the children can negotiate through that. Again, you know, the age of the child will certainly play a big role into them being able to negotiate some of those differences. But within, again, as long as you're playing the same general game, children are very adaptable.
It's pretty amazing, isn't it, Bob, just how resourceful kids are at really every age, but the one thing that they can't resolve, the one thing that they can't negotiate is inconsistency, the ups and downs. If sometimes you'll be there, sometimes you won't, not knowing what to anticipate in the relationship. But how different is that really from us as adults? If we're married or in a relationship with somebody, or even as Dave is saying, if it's in a work situation or even a home environment where you don't know whether you're going to have one from day to day, nobody really operates well if they can't predict their environment, can't predict the most meaningful relationships in their lives. And so I think what you're really saying, too, is that consistency is a necessary, absolutely necessary foundational piece for building predictability and security within a relationship, a parent-child relationship.
Absolutely. One of the stages of development, according to Erickson in his eight stages of man, the global mankind. The first issue is trust versus mistrust, and that is usually from birth to, you know, just under 2 years of age. So the basic kind of conflict there to be resolved is to develop a trusting relationship with the world at large, if you will, is that I have these people in my life, my parents and some, you know, whoever's my caretaker, parents, grandparents, aunts, daycare people, who on a consistent basis is able to meet my needs, physically, obviously, as well as emotional. And again, that is the fundamental issue, that if that's not achieved, that kind of sets a kid off a path that is going to just be very difficult for that child to make his or her way in the world, because he's always on edge and always leery of all his relationships if he's not able, he or she's not able to achieve that level of trust. Again, that's the predictability that the people that I care about care enough about me to help me through this world. And again, that goes through, you know, when children go to preschool, kindergarten, through elementary, and then every single relationship they will ever have the rest of their lives will be impacted by that issue. So,
and
yeah,
Bob,
I
know that each of us have spent enough hundreds and hundreds of hours doing therapy with people, men and women alike, adult men and women of all different ages, including right on into their 70s or 80s, that are living testaments to that, that if we were to get totally psychoanalytic about it, and I know we won't because the insurances don't pay for it, but
right,
if we at least get psychoanalytic enough to understand where some of their dynamics are coming from, it really goes back to that, doesn't it? That the reason so-and-so has control issues, the reason so-and-so is so hypersensitive to abandonment issues, the reason so-and-so can't negotiate relationships is always suspicious that somebody's trying to use them, or somebody's, when they're saying this or saying that, that they really mean something different, or that they can't get close in intimacy because for some reason they want to then run, really could quite honestly most of the time goes back to those childhood issues.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, and I know you all are on board with this, but, you know, my thing with the needs of a child through a separation, divorce, non-intact family is that the needs of that child go with that child, not with the constellation of the family. So what the child needs in the environment of an intact family, the child needs outside of that. And unfortunately, through the process of coming apart for a number of parents, is that those needs of those children get overlooked. And I don't want to say that they get overlooked as though parents aren't aware of them, but, you know, the issue at hand for the parents, from their perspective, is getting through the divorce, working their way through that system, resolving, or maybe not, the conflict between themselves and the other parent. That seems, at least in certain stages of that process, to be the primary focus from the parent's perspective. From the child's perspective, though, that it ushers in a potential crisis for that child. That dependability, the consistency, you know, what's changing, you know, some significant part of that child's life is up for change. And if parents aren't able to, you know, do what they need to do with the attorneys and with the courts and with the friend of the court, and then come out of that and then refocus their energies back onto the child and addressing and making sure that those needs of that child are met, that's where issues in this process, you know, take root.
Well, absolutely. It might otherwise, if not, I mean, ensuring that both parents remain a consistent part of their lives, or they're going to be, you know, sometimes I've heard people say, well, they weren't that consistent in the marriage. Why would I worry about it outside of marriage? Well, it very well may be that those children understood that they weren't all that consistent in the marriage or not all that present. And now they're worried that they might not be present at all. That doesn't mean that it's what they wanted. It doesn't mean that it's what they needed. And fact of the matter is that either way, kids need both parents. They need them to be healthy. They need them to communicate. They need them in a healthy way. They need them to be a loving, consistent, and meaningful part of their lives, something more than just every other weekend. They need them to participate in all those phases of parenting that a parent participates in, and otherwise it definitely has a detrimental effect on their relationship in a parent-child relationship. And certainly, as we've talked about, that then goes on into adult years and their inability to really negotiate relationships.
Exactly.
We have a caller, Dave?
We have a caller. Well, I'm going to bring on a caller, Bob and Larry, and we're going to introduce the program. Tony, welcome to the Best Interest of the Family, Tony. What's your question or comment?
Hi, good evening, guys. I am listening to this, having been divorced twice, having have four kids, and, you know, going through in Colorado, had to go through the parenting course, $49, and go through this. And, you know, I hear a lot of what the kids need and the kids need and what the parents need to do, and I agree with all of that. And the question or the challenge that I'm sometimes overcome with is more so as the how-to. So we can tell both parents that our, you know, the children need this, and it can come from therapy, it can come from the Bible, it comes from other family members all over. The kids need this, the kids need that. How to? How do two parents in a healthy or a not so healthy situation, how do they do this?
Well, you know, Tony, that's an excellent question, and I'm going to let my our guests take a stab at that first, but I have some thoughts about it I'd like to share, too. Excellent question, though. Bob, what do you think?
Absolutely. It's a great question because I've asked myself that hundreds of times during the course of parenting my daughter. The answer that I came up with for myself, in it, that seemed to make sense and worked, was what would I do if we were together, if we were in an intact family? Because why should it change? Why does that answer have to change? Because we're not together. If an issue came up, what decision would I make if I were still married to my daughter's mother? And that was always my guide. And if, you know, I would say, well, this is how I would feel, then I don't need to go beyond that outside of the marriage. Because we're divorced, why does that answer change? Typically, from a child's perspective, it doesn't. Now, it may have ramifications in terms of co-parenting if the other parent isn't on board with that decision for any number of reasons. But from the child's perspective, that decision is fine. Does that get to the heart of your question?
Oh, I think it's philosophically, you're absolutely right. I could never even come up with a way to debate that with you. Yes.
Okay.
That's one answer.
Okay, that is an answer. It's one of many. Concern then becomes, you know, why isn't that appropriate, you know, at the point you're making that decision? Typically because somewhere in the back of your mind, you're thinking, how is this going to play out with the co-parent? Will she approve of this? Will she support it? Will, you know, is this drumming up or stirring up some issue between the two of us? And again, if you're prioritizing the need of the child, my suggestion is, in a good co-parenting dynamic, parents are able to work through that. This is what I think. This is what I did. This is what I'm going to do. The other parent says, well, I would do it differently. I would suggest this. I want you to do that. Well, on some issues, just like in an intact family, the parents need to have a united front, even though they may not agree. But on any number of issues in an intact family, the parents don't need to be in agreement. Well, you know, your mom has this idea, your dad has that idea. So guess what? You're with me when this situation comes up. You play by my rules. This is what I would say regardless if we were together. And again, children can adapt to that as long as you as a parent are consistent. And again, they'll predict that the other parent will be very consistent from her perspective. And children can be okay with that. Now, you as a co-parent, part of that dynamic is you have to be able to anticipate and negotiate when children start to triangulate that, and they will, whether that they're in intact families or non-intact families, and you work through that. But for me, in my experience, and I think for most of the clients that I've seen over the years, that kind of perspective works best for most of the time.
Well, you know, Bob, to kind of try to piggyback a little bit on some of what you're saying, and Tony, I correct me if I'm wrong, but I think part of what you're asking too is that, look, you got parents that don't want to work with one another. You got parents that have an agenda to take the other parent out, to compete with that other parent, to exploit the divisions between them, which, by the way, kids will do on their own, as Bob is saying, whether it's in an intact family or outside of marriage. That's kids' job to exploit the division between their parents. They're going to do that regardless.
Indiana, we call that playing both ends against the middle.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, sure.
But the question then becomes, when you have that dynamic in place, how do you do it? How do you stay consistent in your child's life? How do you not fight with the other parent? How do you keep the kids out of the middle? And, Bob, I think that kind of speaks to our next subject, and that is the importance of boundaries. And to answer your question, Tony, about the how-tos, my thought was that, you know, a lot of times it's useless to even try to get along with that other parent because they're not interested. There's no agenda. But if you can challenge that, look, you can hate me, you can disrespect me, you can hate the way it turned out, you can say I'm a parasite as spouses go, but the bottom line is that as a parent, you love our child, I love our child. And the bottom line is that our child needs a loving and caring consistency with both of us. And whether you bless it or whether you curse it, I'm going to be that part, and I don't want to compete with you. You can count on me to not do that, but I am going to be consistent in our child's life. And without saying it, even in that many words, but by your actions speaking to it, that is one level of notice to that other parent that you're doing your part. Now, some parents that still won't bite on that, it's because of something, a number of different things that drive it, but something that, again, it can be frustrating if you're trying to change it. But that's a distorted perception of what their role versus your role in that child's life is. And all you can really do in that scenario is take time to try to be what your role needs to be in that child's life, consistent and healthy, and never allowing the competition to take seed or root, if you will, on your end of things, just to really compete with yourself to stay consistent, to stay loving, to stay something that your child can love and understand. That's something I've said over and over and over, and it's kind of my mantra, being something my son can love and understand. And even when he can't understand, something that he can come to understand, not so complicated, not so complex, that he scratches his head, walks away, and says, man, my dad is a complex guy. I just don't get him. I want him to get me. And if he doesn't, I want him to be able to come to me and say, Dad, Can we start somewhere for me to understand? Absolutely. You can talk to me about anything, son, anything you need. And to at least try. And I think my son, even at 7 years old, would tell you, you know, my dad's a goofball, but I get him. I get him. And, again, it's not about competing with anybody. It's about being what my son needs me to be in a dad. It's about being what your child needs you to be in a mom. And coming from that angle, then I think kind of frees up the dynamic a little bit to at least say, well, you know, maybe they were a piece of crap as a spouse, but, well, you know, they're there for our child. And, you know, then if they're intimidated by that, they feel like they need to compete with it again. You know, there's only so much you can do in any given immediate time. But over time, as long as you stay consistent, you'll stay an authority in your child's perception of you. And as long as you're an authority in your child's perception, that parent will have to treat you as such in due time.
In due time, I do agree. I mean, just to the reason, the motivation behind the question is this, gentlemen, and Larry and Dave, you know, you've read my book, you know my story. But right now, my 19 and 17-year-old kids in Colorado will have nothing to do with me. They despise me, and it was the sharing of all the secrets that generated that. But to go back to my question, and what I'm doing now is every week, whether it's a letter in the mail or a text or an email, I simply let the kids know that I love them, I miss them, and I'm here. And my latest goal is I'm in the process of starting to write a letter once again to their mother to try and get her to be willing to work out whatever issues she's got out there, because I know most of it is coming from her. I've forgiven her. I've asked for forgiveness. I don't know what else I can do. I can't find any more things in my life that I can take responsibility for. But, you know, one of the how-tos is every week the kids get something from me to let them know their dad's there and that he loves them.
And that's consistency. And that, you know, in the long term, those your kids are having that kind of contact with you despite whatever efforts on their mother's side to alienate you. And
right.
You know, parents do that and do that far too often. And unfortunately, you know, children become affected by that in so many ways. But, you know, the hope would be that, you know, through that consistent contact, whether or not it's reciprocated at this point, eventually comes around and say, you know, through all that stuff that you know, we went through, you know, growing up, we knew and come to know that our father cared enough to make every possible effort to stay somehow connected. That's consistency, that's predictability, because although they may not contact you now, I guarantee you, if they'd be getting these letters and getting them regularly, the time they don't get them, they'll remember that. That speaks to the power of just simply, you know, being consistent. You know, parent alienation is a horrible thing to do to a child, let alone to the other parent. But it has such a dramatic effect potentially on children. And it, again, it frames all of the relationships they'll have for the rest of their life, because it really calls into question that trust versus mistrust issue. That the other parent is so despicable and so vile that you should not have any contact, any trust, any relationship whatsoever. That's the implicit message from the parent who is alienating the other co-parent. And that's just so destructive and just so many ways, and we could spend hours on that issue alone.
Absolutely.
But, you know, in from a parent who is the subject or object of alienation, that's why consistency is so important. You know, there are different levels of alienation or efforts at alienation. But parents try, you know, one co-parent will attempt to alienate the other while there's active, consistent contact. Just by derogatory statements, just very manipulative things that end up being done that serve to undermine the relationship of that other co-parent. That's a level of alienation that can be very destructive. But the way to counter that, if you're having that direct contact with those children, one, through consistency, two, not buying into that dynamic, parenting that child appropriately healthy despite your co-parent's efforts to alienate you. And when we talk alienation, we're not talking about simple expected disagreements on parenting issues or whether or not to sign, you know, Johnny up for T-ball or football or soccer. That's not alienating, you know. We're talking about a consistent effort on one parent to undermine the value and the importance of the other parent.
Right.
It's destructive.
Well, I'll tell you what, we've got to start wrapping things up for tonight. But I'll tell you what, Tony, we really appreciate you calling in with your questions. And I know that Larry and I both want to encourage you to continue with this consistency. We understand that there is some pain involved with being the parent who's being alienated against, and we want to encourage you in that relationship. In addition to just letting you know that there is a network out here that's going to support you through this. So again, we appreciate your call, and just be the parent, man. That's what I always tell people.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Don't ask permission. Just be the parent, because that's what you are. So
yep.
Thanks, Tony.
Thank you.
You bet. All right, Bob, just a couple things to wrap up tonight. One is, how can folks provide for like a self-evaluation to see if they're not contributing anything negative? And the final thing being, how do we build healthy boundaries with these issues?
Well, those two questions kind of go hand in hand. If you have healthy boundaries, you're much more likely to do an effective kind of self-evaluation of your parenting style and the effectiveness of your parenting style. And, we talked about this, yesterday, and I was kind of, boy, is there a handy-dandy, 20-question kind of survey you can do to evaluate your parent effectiveness? There's all kinds of classes and books about parent effectiveness stuff out there. But I think, for me it comes down to, are you able, do you have the capacity for self-reflection? Are you able to take feedback from other people that may be very supportive, but maybe not so supportive of certain, things that you might be doing with your children? So, what I would suggest people to do is, again, take some time to self-reflect. How am I doing? How do I really think and feel? What do I really think and feel about how my children are responding to me? And then talk to your family. Talk to friends that you trust who won't just sign off on your stuff, but actually talk to you about what they see is going on between you and your children. And they'll tell you, hey, this is, they'll tell you. Straight up, if they're good, trusting friends and not just, yes men, sycophants just signing off and everything, they'll tell you, this is going great, man. But you know what? Maybe you want to think about this, kind of issue that's going on. Those people that you have good, trusty, healthy relationships with you will give you that feedback, because these are people that you're interacting with your children. Or if you're not, I would encourage you to think about doing that, because again, they provide such valuable feedback. They interact with your kids, they interact with you, and those people know firsthand from their perspective, how things are going. And your ability to accept their feedback, even when it's maybe not as flattering as you might have hoped, will really signal, how you're doing with your kids. Parents get really, really, really neurotic about evaluating themselves and their parenting based solely on how a kid is behaving at a given point in time. Sometimes, you know, it's fed by the other co-parent jumping on that bandwagon and making more out of it than needs to be. But having that objective or slightly more objective feedback from family and friends helps you as a parent to stay as objective as possible in a very subjective topic. And that is, you know, your mother, your father, your brothers, your sisters, your good friends who've known you for a while can say, hey, that's just what kids do. Relax. It's okay. You're doing fine. Or, hey, you know what? Maybe you do need to back off a little bit. Maybe you're being a little too hard, or maybe you're not being tough enough on this issue. So they give you real valuable stuff. And I think one of the pitfalls of parents who are engaged in this divorce and separation and non-intact process is that we do sometimes become very isolated. And that's not so good for us as parents. It's not good for our kids. They need to spend time with you alone and doing the parenting thing, but to engage them in social activities and watching you engage in appropriate social activities is very helpful, very helpful. So that's what I would suggest, taking some time for self-reflection and asking the people that you trust for their feedback.
But, Bob, what exactly is a boundary, and where can I get one?
Well, for $19.95, I'll send you one, and if you do it by midnight, I'll give you a 2-for-1 deal.
Straight from New Orleans.
Now, wait a minute, that New Orleans boundary.
Not on Bourbon Street.
And operators are standing by.
yeah.
Is that a toll-free call, Bob?
Larry put me up to that, by the way, just so you know.
Boundaries. Well, okay. Yeah, that's kind of a tough one. How do you get one? If as an adult you don't have them, that's a problem.
Start from there. If you don't have them, that's a statement in and of itself,
yeah.
Isn't it? I mean, no, seriously, that's kind of a statement if you don't have good boundaries. And if those are overflowing onto your parenting, let's talk just, you know, in the limited time we have left, but maybe just briefly for folks, how, in fact...
Well, but if we describe what a boundary is...
Well, you know, the fact of the matter is that, for example, when your personal issues become the issues of your kids, when you aren't in the parent role, your kids are more like a go-to friend, or you're involving them in things that truly, you know, regardless of their age, really is your matter as a parent, not theirs as a child. Maybe talk a little bit about that, Bob.
Yeah. Yeah. We're not talking about problems with boundaries when you get down on the floor and you play with your children like a kid. That's not a boundary issue. Now, if that's all you're able to do, that's a boundary issue.
now you're confusing it. Go ahead.
Well, no. I mean, that's...
I know. It's all good.
Because when, you know, I hear parents, you know, in my personal life as well as, you know, as clients who tell me they want, their goal is to be their child's best friend.
Mm-hmm.
That's a signal from my perspective that's a potential boundary issue. So I explore that. What do you really mean by that?
Can you say your next man?
Thank you. Exactly. And if a parent really means that, you know, they really want to be their, you know, the parent that, you know, hangs out with their child, you know, too much involved in the kid's sleepovers, and, you know, going hanging out at the mall with the kid, and not just as a parent-child, but as one of the kids, that's a boundary issue. There's a time and place to you know, play with your kids like a kid, and then you need to be able to step back. Your role as a parent is not to be their best friend, but to be their best parent as possible. And that means, yeah, it's all fine and good until you cross whatever lines there are as a child. And I have to now step out of that, and I'm going to provide you discipline. I'm going to give you feedback, consequences. If the parent's not able to do that, that's a boundary issue. The parent is overly invested in their child's achievements, whether it's academic or sports. Usually you see, you know, parents, from the father's side, like in the sports, you know, the football dad and all that. Well, the same thing happens with moms and, you know, the beauty queen mothers and things of that nature, where it's obviously this child has no real independent interest in this, only because the parent has the child involved. Is this kid doing this? You know, and that's the kid at 6 years old, stereotypical, but are in the beauty pageants. It's like, okay, yeah, kids want to dress up. You know, little girls want to dress up at 6 and 7 years old. Yeah, they you know, might see the, you know, Miss USA kind of thing. Sure, I'd love to do all that. But the overly invested parent signs them up for that beauty pageant, has them, you know, all decked out in the whole nine yards. That's a boundary issue. That's an extreme, but that's a boundary issue. So, yeah, that parent who cannot step out and provide clear consequences, clear, you know, you'll do this or this will happen, is that person who has a boundary issue. Parents who attempt to alienate their co-parent, that's a boundary issue, because they're willing to sacrifice the best interest of their child to work out their own individual issues with that other co-parent. They're willing to sacrifice the overall health and well-being of their child to get back at the other parent. That's a big boundary issue. Again, that's not your, you know, everyday co-parent situation, but those are boundary issues. We, you know, develop our boundaries in our own families of origin, and, you know, if we didn't get them earlier as adults, they're hard to get, they're hard to develop, and that usually takes some degree of therapy to firm those up, to establish them, so they're firm but flexible, but not so porous that enmeshment occurs between parent and child.
Very good. Well, I'll tell you what, Bob, we're going to close things up tonight.
Okay.
You know, brought some really, really good nuggets of wisdom there, Bob. We're very pleased that we had you on tonight to talk about this subject.
Well, Dave,
you know, I'm
pretty good.
I'm always happy to jump in there. So, hope it wasn't too rambling, and we stayed.
No, we covered a lot of good stuff here tonight. You know, I'm sure that there was that our listeners found some real value in you know, some of the things that you pointed out. Again, Bob, thanks for helping us out on tonight's program here at Best Interest of the Family, and you know, hopefully, you know, things will blow by you down there in New Orleans. And you know,
I trust they will.
You know, okay. Just tie yourself down if you need to.
And La Basse Tenterelle, my friend, La Basse Tenterelle.
All right, La Basse Tenterelle to you. All right.
Pass me another one of them La Bats, that's what I say.
Very good. Well, thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure, and you guys do an invaluable service. So keep up the work.
Hey, thank you, Bob. And we'll
all
talk
right
to you real soon. Thanks a lot, buddy.
Talk to you later. All right, bye-bye.
Good night. And well, I'll tell you what, ladies and gentlemen, you know, Larry and I are always pleased and excited to be able to put on this broadcast here for Best Interest of the Family. You can check out our website at bestinterestofthefamily.com. Again, we encourage you to check out groups like Dads and Moms of Michigan at dadsandmomsofmichigan.org. And, you know, in addition, look on the front page of their website, because there is a shared parenting seminar. You can get all kinds of good information, everything from legal information to counseling information, you know, just like Larry and Bob went over tonight. And, again, that's on September the 11th of this coming month at Hazel Park, Michigan, at the Eagles Club. So, and again, this is Best Interest of the Family, and you know, we're here to broadcast about primarily relationships, relationships, and about reform as it pertains to issues of family and children and relationships.
And, you know, our society desperately is in need of specific reforms as it pertains to these issues, as many of you know that listen to this broadcast. And it's because children need they need both parents, you know, bottom line. So if children have both parents and there is, as we talked about tonight, consistency and there are healthy boundaries. See, I learned something.
You even said the word pretty well, Dave.
Yeah, just think about that. So, again, folks, you know, it comes down to respecting your co-parent. It comes down to remaining a consistent and loving and encouraging a parent in the life of your children. I know that there are some of those that listen to this broadcast that are struggling with these issues because of outside third-party forces that are preventing you from having that relationship, that proper relationship that you desire. But here at Best Interest of the Family Radio, we want to continue to encourage you and let you know that there is an encouraging network out here of loving parents who definitely want to stand beside you and assist you with these issues. And so don't be afraid to ask for advice from folks that have been there, whether it's about parental alienation, whether it's about engaging a system that's not always fair, you know, about dealing with your issues, or whether it's about dealing directly with a friend of the court worker, or whether it might be managing your attorney. Okay, so, you know, there's many of us out here that have dealt with these issues, or whether it may just be about a basic, you know, fundamental question about your kid, because many of us have, you know, daughters or sons that that we've been there, done that, and, of course, you know, Larry can attest to the fact that there are different needs based on the developmental stages of your child. So, again, we want to thank you for finding some value in our broadcast and, you know, enough to download it or listen to it live, and we will see you folks again next Tuesday's broadcast. Until then, God bless.
Good night.